From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, everybody. Listen, I have a confession to make. I don't know what I'm doing. That's right, I have no real skills, and the only reason they let me do this job is because I also double as newscaster Korva Coleman. It's true. Listen, here I'll do Korva.
Hello, from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman.
See, it's me. So what I like to do sometimes is consult with real experts and get their expertise, see what that's like. This week we're going to replay some recent interviews we did with very accomplished people, see what wisdom we can glean the second time around.
And we're going to start with somebody who makes a living playing incompetent people, but actually has a secret superpower. We talked with actor Ed Helms in June of 2009, and Peter began by asking him about his mad skills on the banjo.
Let's go right to the stuff people most want to hear. You do, in fact, play the banjo.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've been wrestling with it my entire life.
Are you trying to wrestle it into submission, or...?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that sort of increases your social isolation.
Yeah.
Do you ever think of joining a reading club?
Well, like most banjo players, I can't read.
There you are.
Well, that's perfect.
Aren't most banjo players, don't they pick up the instrument as the result of a prank played on them by other musicians? It's sort of like the musical equivalent of a snipe hunt. It's like, oh, here, play this thing. That'll sound good.
Or I suspect someone might take up the banjo if they just were really angry at their spouse.
There you are. So in Hangover, you're missing a tooth. And,
yes.
And it turns out, we were fascinated to discover this, that this isn't special effects. You actually don't have a tooth.
That is true.
A single tooth? You don't have a single tooth?
Well, when I was, I don't have any teeth. Again, I go, that's because I'm a banjo player. When you pick up the banjo, you have to hand in your teeth.
Exactly.
I was born without a right lateral incisor.
No.
Yeah. So I had a baby tooth, but the adult tooth never came in. So when I was a teenager, I got an implant, and which I had for 20 years. And then for some reason, I just mentioned that I happened to have an implant. And
come
then,
on, you tell everyone this story.
So what's amazing is you were just ready to, as you say, the role was written, he's missing a tooth, it's a plot point, and you were ready to go. Do you have any other natural deformities that will be useful to you in future roles? Is it that you have a peg leg and someday there'll be a pirate script that will show up on your desk?
Well, I do. It's weird. I do have my left hand is a machine gun. So I'm hoping that some script will...
And of course, back in elementary school, the kids used to mock you once. And now look, I wanted to get back a little bit to the roles you're most well known for. It's The Daily Show and now in The Office. Is there a way that you can describe the character that you've played? Is it the same guy? Is it a consistent
thing?
Yes,
I tried to inject a certain sort of stupid earnestness into my work.
I've built my career on that as well. Yeah.
Well, you sort of continue this in The Office. Isn't your character in the Office, like everybody else in that show, a lot less smart than he thinks he is?
Yes, exactly. My character on The Office, Andy Bernard, doesn't have a poker face. He's totally transparent, but he thinks he's stealthy.
Right. Is there any kind of research that you need to do or life experience that you can bring to play people who are dumber than you are?
Well, I guess I appreciate the assumption that I'm smarter than these characters.
Yeah.
No, you know, those, especially Andy Bernard, he's a guy that I ultimately sort of feel sorry for, which is how I find a lot of affection for him as an actor.
There's sort of pity going on.
Yeah.
One of the things we've noticed about The Office, we've heard about it, is, you know, the way it's done as a faux documentary, meaning that the idea is that the camera can go anywhere. So you guys are often on set pretending to work in this office while they're shooting scenes around you, right? Isn't that how it works?
You're always popping in on the background. Absolutely.
And have you? I mean, we've learned, for example, that one of your co-stars in the show, she just spends all day shopping online. But what do you do when you're sitting there at your desk and you're not in the shot, but you might be at any minute? How do you amuse yourself?
I read banjo blogs.
No.
I swear to God.
Really?
I sift through bluegrass websites and...
What are the entries on banjo blogs like? It's like, day 48, still alone. I mean, what? Now, one last question before we go to the quiz. We saw you in Letterman, and you did your amazing Tom Brokaw impersonation, which was...
Oh, thank you.
Which is really stunning.
Thank you.
Can we hear a little bit of it? Because we mentioned it now.
Sure. The Israelis have once again launched an all-out attack on the Palestinians.
That's amazing.
But I also do an Al Gore.
Well, that's what we heard. We want to just get to this.
Yeah.
We heard that you do, and I don't know how you come up with this, a gay Al Gore.
Right.
And we really want to hear that for once in our lives.
If I were elected president, I would make absolutely certain that patent leather stiletto heels came in men's sizes.
Well, Ed Helms, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Oh, no! It's L-shaped, and it's coming my way!
This week, as I'm sure you've noticed, because of all the spontaneous street demonstrations, it was the 25th anniversary of the classic computer game Tetris. So we're going to ask you three questions about that addictive game. That's when we have to arrange the falling bricks so they don't pile up all the way to the top. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's Voice, and their home answering machine, which is more than anybody ever won playing Tetris. Carl, who is Ed Helms playing for?
Ed is playing for Anthony Lewis of Portland, Maine.
All right, you ready to go?
Let's do it.
First question. In addition to being the single most popular video game of the last 2.5 decades, Tetris has achieved many other landmarks, including which of these? A, the National American Chamber of Commerce cited it as having reduced American productivity more than any other single cause. B, it led to the longest prison sentence ever given for playing a video game. Or C, it inspired a new officially recognized disease in optometry, Tetris Eye.
I'm going to have to go with B on that one.
You're going to go with B, the longest prison sentence ever for playing a video game. You're correct.
All right.
The longest prison sentence for ever playing a video game was 4 months. It was handed down to a man who refused to turn off his Tetris game when his plane was coming in to land at Heathrow Airport. Despite the instructions from flight attendants, they put him in jail for 4 months. Next question is very good. Tetris has triumphed in other areas of the culture as well, including which of these? A, a best-selling series of Russian novels about a kid who's recruited to be a spy because of his Tetris skills. B, the Tetris theme song, as arranged by none other than Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, was a top 10 pop hit in the UK. Or C, Ashton Kutcher has agreed to play the lead in a planned movie version of the game.
All right. I don't think B or C are very plausible.
You don't think the Andrew Lloyd Webber Tetris theme song?
By elimination, I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with the novels about the Tetris hero in Russian. No, actually, it was the Tetris theme song, but it was a pop hit.
What?
It's true. In fact, here is Andrew Lloyd Webber's arrangement of the Tetris theme song as heard in the British charts.
I know you're going to dig this.
There you go.
Wow, that took me back to my Broadway days.
I'm sure it did. Now, the last question is also about that song, that tune you just heard. Believe it or not, in the original version back in Russia, it had lyrics. The Tetris theme song had lyrics. Which of these is an actual excerpt from the lyrics in translation? A, "Oi, my crate is so light, the strap is no longer cutting into my shoulders." B, "We fit together like an L piece and two squares." Or C, "Here comes the advancing army in many bright colors to conquer us with joy."
Here comes the advancing army in many bright colors
That's the one you're picking?
I think I'm going to go with C, yeah.
You're going to go with Here Comes the Advancing Army, Many Bright Colors to Conquer Us with Joy as the lyrics to the Tetris theme song. It was A. Oi, my crate is so light. And strap is no longer cutting in my shoulders. You see, what we know is Tetris Theme A was actually an old Russian folk song about a traveling salesman who falls in love, and he was referring to the bag of stuff that he carried around with him.
Now, I mean, how does the word oi translate?
It's oi, you know, it's like oi.
I mean, is it the same in Russian?
It's oi, it's the same in Russian. Actually, I think actually in Russian the original is golly, but it's translated. No, it's oi, like oi, my oi, oi, my crate is so light. That's really, I'm not kidding.
All right.
We got it from Wikipedia. It has to be true.
Oi.
Carl, how did Ed Helms do on our show?
Ed needed at least two correct answers to win for Anthony Lewis, but he had just one correct answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, Anthony.
It's all right. Ed Helms is starring in the film The Hangover, and, as you know, he plays Andy Narddog Bernard on NBC's The Office. Ed Helms, thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
It was great to have you. Take care, Ed. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Every week we advertise our Not My Job game as asking experts about things they don't know anything about. And this week we are really stressing the expert part.
Our next authority figure is somebody I've admired and modeled my own life after. Professional skateboarder Tony Hawk.
When he joined us in Pasadena, California in November of 2009, I began by asking him about his beginnings as a skater.
I was about 10 years old, right. Just started in my neighborhood. A lot of my friends were doing it. My older brother was an avid surfer and skater, and he gave me his old board one day, and I tried it out and just sort of did it with my friends, but never took it that seriously until I eventually made my way to the skate park, and I saw these guys flying out of empty swimming pools, and I was hooked.
Really? There was something about people flying into the air above very hard concrete surfaces that really cried out to you.
That was it. That was my calling, yes.
Wow. Did your parents have anything to say about this?
They did. They were actually very supportive, and I got lucky in that because a lot of my friends, their parents did not want them skating.
Right.
And I was the youngest of four children, so by the time I came along, my parents had been through everything, and they just let me go.
Yeah, you know, I'm like that.
Yeah, it's not a first child sport, is it?
Yeah, it really
is. No,
like, yeah, my first child, very protective, my second child, very protective, my third child, I don't know where she is right now. She's six, I don't know.
Okay, I got to ask, because I've been dying to ask this question. How many broken bones have you had in your lifetime?
Officially three.
Only three?
Wow.
Only three.
Yeah. Where are they?
Were any of them skateboard related?
Yeah.
I broke my elbow. I have two screws in my elbow. That was my sort of standard break right there. I fractured my pelvis pretty much all the way through. That was a bad day. I broke my thumb.
Oh, well.
I know.
Did you that. Yeah. Big
right,
deal.
Right. No, actually, I was doing a complete revolution loop ramp, so a ramp that goes all the way around, like a Hot Wheels track.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's something that I had done in the past, and this day I was feeling cocky, and I wasn't warmed up, and I was like, yeah, I got this, no problem, and I fell from the top, and that was...
Ooh.
I fractured my skull, too. Does that count as a broken bone?
Yes, that does.
Okay.
Maybe that's what you go for. Forgotten about a lot of other broken bones.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is frightening to have enough concussions that you recognize having a concussion.
Oh, this again.
That you're like, I don't remember what's happening. Oh, I must have fallen on my head again. Oh. I got it.
Now, you have done a tremendous amount in your skating career. You've invented a whole bunch of tricks. And apparently it is incumbent upon the inventor of the trick to name the trick, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the tricks that you have named?
Well, things like stale fish, Madonna.
Madonna is when you do what?
Is it a stale fish Madonna, or are they two different things?
Ooh, you know, you can...
Can you do that?
You can do a stale fish Madonna. It's really hard. You get tangled up, but you can do it.
So did A-Rod.
Yeah. You beat me. Yeah.
Actually, the Madonna is kind of funny because it was a trick that I invented, and I was talking to my friend. I said, you know, I'm inventing a lot of... I've been creating some tricks, and they never seem to catch on. People don't take to them. You know, and he's like, it's almost like just novelties. And he said, well, you got to name them something trendy. And at the time, Madonna was the trendiest thing out there. And it worked.
So there's really no connection
You're not like...
No, but you can do a Sean Penn. That's what backs on Madonna.
Well, this you're really
I'm not
well
kidding.
Done.
That's not a joke.
No, wait.
You're dating yourself.
That's a joke that will only make sense to people who are like that's reading awesome. People in the 80s.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Right. Right. Yeah. Like new generations. Like,
is there a Warren Beatty?
Do you have a Liz Taylor and a Richard Burton?
Is there one place you would love to skateboard but haven't yet?
I have not been to China. The largest skate park in the world is in Shanghai.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And I would love to go see it.
What about skating down the Hoover Dam? Because it's...
Oh.
I've seen that. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking giant ramp, yeah?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's what you do.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a skateboarder.
Well, giant drop, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The only trick... It's a great trick. You can only do it once to paraphrase Daffy Duck. Tony Hawk, we are delighted to have you here. We've asked you here to play a game. We're calling...
Hey, you could put out an eye.
You've spent your career, as we've discussed, horrifying the concerned mothers of America as you inspire people to hurl themselves into the air. So we thought we'd ask you three questions about safety measures, sometimes rather extreme ones. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is skateboarder Tony Hawk playing for?
Tony is playing for Nick Alexander of Ventura, California.
All right. Ready to play?
Ready.
Here we go. The first question. You know that the most common safety device is the construction worker's hard hat. According to one industrial expert, it was invented by whom? A. Franz Kafka. B. King Ludwig of Bavaria. Or C. Gertrude Stein.
I'm going to go with the King Ludwig.
Mad King Ludwig of Bavaria. No, according to Peter Drucker, management guru, the construction worker's hard hat was invented by Franz Kafka. We remember that Kafka was an insurance agent, and he insisted that some clients wear some kind of hard head protection when they went onto construction sites, and thus Kafka invented the construction hard hat.
Wow.
He also had another device that was not picked up. It was people should keep insecticide handy in case anybody around them were to be transformed into a monstrous vermin. Next question. Some safety devices go a bit too far, shall we say, in mainstreaming fear, including which of these? A, a combination MP3 player and taser. B, Kevlar capri pants. Or C, underpants with a GPS transmitter.
You know, the MP3 player, they'll combine that with anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, the MP3 player and taser.
Thank you.
This is the Taser Company's C2 model. It's got a standard taser with an MP3 player built into the holster.
In the name of love.
The real question is how many gigs?
That's exactly. How many gigs and how many watts, actually. Yeah. All right, this
Do you
think
the people who have those just load them up with ironically titled songs like that, or just load up the Lightning Hopkins or something, you know?
I think they just wait for people to insult them because it's not an iPod.
That's true.
And then they tase
it. Exactly.
You know what?
There's an
app for this.
All right, this is great. This is all, for all the marbles, last question. For the woman in your life who is really, really afraid, one Japanese inventor came up with what? A, an inflatable guard dog. B, a skirt that doubles as a fake vending machine you can hide inside. Or hairspray that with the flick of a switch becomes a flamethrower.
Oh, gosh.
And a skirt that doubles as a vending machine?
That's just so outlandish that that's got to be it.
You're going to go for the skirt?
I think so. I actually have those books of Japanese inventions.
Yes, unuseless Japanese inventions.
Yeah, those, and that seems like one that would just fit right in there.
Well, you're right. It is, in fact, the right answer.
Thank you.
Although... you have to see it to believe it, and you can look on our website. It's you unhook and unfold the skirt, and you hold it up in front of you, and it looks just like a Coke machine. And potential attackers will walk right on by, unless, of course, they're thirsty.
And then they'll shake you.
Damn it.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
And then they'll assault you by putting coins in your nose. And that will be bad.
And then they'll shake you. Right?
Carl, how do you...
Nice girls don't wear vending machines. Yeah. This is where I come from.
Carl, how did Tony Hawk do in our quiz?
Tony had two correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win for Nick Alexander.
Whoa! Right.
Well done.
Tony Hawk is a legendary skateboarder. His new video game, Tony Hawk's Ride, will be out soon. Tony Hawk, thank you so much.
All right, thanks
for joining us.
Our next guest is an expert on something else, something I can't bring myself to say.
So I'll say it. Swearing. Susie Essman, who you probably know as Susie Green on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm, joined us in October of 2009. We asked her if she really was like the foul-mouthed, angry woman she plays on TV.
I would say I have a short fuse.
You do.
But I'm always provoked.
Yes.
It's not coming out of nowhere. You know, people think the character's just this crazy, screaming woman, and there's always a reason why she's angry.
So she's a sane, screaming woman.
Exactly, Peter.
I can hear it building now.
How did you get this role? Were you chewing somebody out and somebody said, hey?
No, Larry just called me and offered it to me because he knew I had a way with language.
I see. Well, had this been what you were known for in the New York
No,
Comedy
not
circles?
Really, no.
No.
No, it is what I'm known for now in this very bizarre kind of, my life has become strange. That people just walk up to me in the street and beg me to yell and scream and curse at them.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And what do? Do you accommodate this? Do you accept this as the price of your fame?
No.
You don't do it?
No, because, you know, I get paid a lot of money to yell and scream and curse. They're not getting it free.
We heard you say once that people actually want to get you on the phone yelling and screaming at somebody else.
Yes, I've done that for charity.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So what happens? I make a donation, and what do you do for me?
And then I will, you know, leave an answering machine message, for example, to somebody that you want me to yell and scream at.
Oh, wow.
Gosh. It's a beautiful thing that I could raise money for needy causes by cursing.
Carl should try it.
Yeah,
I know, Carl. I don't think Carl can do it. I don't think you've got that in you.
How much do you get paid for
that? Oh, maybe he does. Talk us through this. You say it takes talent. Break it down for us. How do you work up that big head of steam and come up with just the right mean thing
well,
to say?
Well, it depends. You know, I'll think of something like, you know, I have teenagers, so I think about stuff that they do.
Really?
They're basically mentally ill people with car keys.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because as one of the things you write about in your delightful new book is you acquired both a husband and a complete family instantly.
Yeah, it's like a sitcom waiting to happen that hasn't.
It hasn't happened.
No.
So you got married, and your husband had children from a prior marriage, and they were relatively advanced. They were like in their teenage years. So how did
we have four teenagers.
Oh, my God. So how do you go from being a single woman about town in New York City, comedian, nightclub, habitué, to a suburban mom?
Well, here's what happens when you have teenagers. You think you're hip, you think you're cool, and then one day you realize that you're just an idiot. You know, like they roll their eyes at me.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah. And I was queen of the eye rollers. I was so good at it, you could actually hear my eyes rolling. And now I'm getting rolled at. You know, the irony.
Can you have them watch an episode or two of Curb, and then they'd be like, okay, Mom, whatever you say.
No, they don't live in fear. I'm nothing to them.
Really?
But yeah. I mean, I'm their mother, and they love me. And you know, but, I mean, in terms of, like, Susie Green kind of fear, they could care less.
Really?
You know, when I first met them, you know what I did? I bought their love.
You bought their love.
Yeah, they were like Russian mail order brides. It was exponential. The more I spent, the more they loved me.
Wow. You were a single woman living in New York, living the life of the successful actress and comic, hanging out. And is it possible to continue being a comedian when the source of your material has changed so much?
Yeah, one of the reasons why I got married and now I have all these kids is so I have a new source of material.
Yeah.
I got teenagers. It's endless.
But yeah, but they must be aware of that. I mean, they must know that anything they do...
As long as I keep buying, they don't care.
Really?
Yeah. You know, how do they expect me to pay for all that stuff? Here's the thing about teenagers. Their cerebral frontal cortex is not fully formed till they're 25.
I've heard that.
So you have to assume that they're mentally impaired, that you're dealing with mentally ill people, and that's why they make really bad decisions, and they're susceptible to peer pressure, and they think they know everything. So it's as though until they're 25, you're living in an insane asylum. I'm not saying that glibly.
25, you said? Really?
Yeah, 25. Well, maybe for men, it's 32.
It couldn't be. Well, Susie Essman, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're a sanctified, beatified, and a really nice guy.
Now, no one has ever heard any of your material or your performances would ever say, that's Susie Essman. What a saint. We're going to ask you three questions about saints, genuine saints of the Apostolic Catholic Church. Two questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Susie Essman playing for?
Susie is playing for Wes Burns of Jatorkly, Illinois.
Now, they know I'm Jewish, right?
They do.
Okay.
Their expectations are lower.
And if she doesn't get two right, she'll leave the message on the answering machine.
Thank you, Bo, for volunteering that.
All right, here is your first saint. It's Saint Simeon Stylite. He was one of the most popular and famous saints of the early Catholic Church. He brought pilgrims from all over the world to visit him in 5th century Syria. What did he do to cause such devotion? A. He ate nothing but tree bark and yet lived. B. He stood on a pillar outside for 37 years. Or C. He could command worms to appear on the surface of the earth whenever he so desired.
I would say C.
You're going to go for C. He could make worms...
The other two are just too bizarre.
Too bizarre, eating tree bark or standing in the pillar. Well, actually, the second one, it was correct. He stood on a pillar for 37 years. His name, in fact, Stylite, refers to the pillar he stood on.
Did he ever have to go to the bathroom? He just stood on the pillar?
The records are unclear, but he stayed on that pillar for 37 years. He slept
you know
on
what?
It.
That's not true.
I thought that was... I thought that was St. David Blaine.
Yeah. No. Simeon Stylite, people would come from all over to talk to him and gain his wisdom, which is why he climbed up in the pillar in the first place, so that people would stop bothering him.
They didn't have cable in those days.
It's true. So it's like, what do you want to do tonight? Hey, you want to look at the guy standing in the pillar? That sounds like fun. Okay, you've got two more questions. Your next saint is St. Joseph of Cupertino. He was a Franciscan monk who lived in the 17th century in Italy. He became famous, too famous in the eyes of the church, because he could do what? Was it A, fly, B, hold his breath for a whole day, or C, talk in the voice of Noah, King David, and 100 other biblical characters?
He was Rich Little.
He was the Rich Little of his time.
I would say fly.
You're right, fly. He was known as the flying monk. Huh. And apparently he could launch himself into the air in religious ecstasy. The church eventually told him to quit it. All right, this is very exciting because if you get this last question right, you will win our game. Your last saint is Saint Clare of Assisi. She was a famous medieval nun. She is known today for her chastity and good works and her vow of poverty. But she has a particular role in today's church. What is it and why did she get it? A, because of her famously rapid walks around the monastery. She is the patron saint of NASCAR and other automobile races. B, because of regular visions she had on the wall of her room, she is the patron saint of television. Or C, as she regularly spoke in tongues, she is the patron saint of professional translators.
Oh, my goodness.
I would say B.
B, TV?
Yeah.
You're right. Little did you know,
what
being
a good
on television,
Catholic Jew you are.
That you had a patron saint.
My husband's Catholic.
According to legend, when St. Clare was unable to go to Mass, she was able to see the service on the wall of her room.
Huh.
So Pope Pius XII made her the patron saint of TV in 1958.
Is she network or cable, do you think, at this point?
She must have been so excited. She, unlike everybody else in the Middle Ages, had something to watch. Carl, how did Susie Essman do in our quiz?
Susie had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins for Wes Burns. Congratulations.
Well
Susie.
Done, Susie.
Wow. I'm so excited.
Susie Essman plays Susie Green on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. Her new book is called What Would Susie Say? Susie Essman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
It was great to have you.
Thanks,
good luck
Susie.
With the book.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. This week, we're going over some of our consultations with experts, also known as our Not My Job game. We've learned a lot so far, but it's time to push the envelope. It's time to do something really stupid.
Or, in our case, just talk about it. In September of 2009, we were joined by Reed Timmer, one of the real storm chasers, a weather scientist who careens around the Midwest looking for tornadoes.
I began by asking when he first got interested in severe weather.
Yeah, I've been obsessed with them since I was 4 or 5 years old, and you know, I'd watch the weather on TV 12 hours a day. I'd get all fired up when severe weather would come.
Wait a minute.
And
as a 5-year-old, you sat and watched weather on TV for 12 hours a day?
Non-stop, yeah.
Now, most of what we know about your business comes from the movie Twister, prior to seeing your TV series. Oh, you make the laugh. First question, in the movie Twister, of course, there were the good storm chasers and there were the evil storm chasers. Are you a good or an evil storm chaser?
I think we're definitely the good storm chasers.
Really?
Yeah.
As opposed to
there are some bad teams out there.
Really? You're making all these sighing noises. Are you really tired of being asked about the movie Twister?
No, I actually love the movie Twister. It's one of my favorite movies.
Really? Why am I not surprised? There is a famous scene in that movie where a cow goes flying by. Does that sort of thing happen? Really odd things get lifted up into the air and fly by you?
Yeah, there's some crazy things. Actually, and you'll see it on the Discovery Storm Chaser series, but at Kirksville, Missouri, we were parked next to this field of what looked like mini donkeys, and we intercepted the tornado, and it continued east. It was heading straight for the production vehicle, and something fell on the top of the roof and caved it in 6 inches, and we thought it was one of those mini donkeys originally, but in hindsight, we found out it was a telephone pole that blew back off again.
Really?
It's a tense story, anyway. But we did return to that town afterward, and there was the herd was probably cut in half, I would say. So,
we are in Southern California, Santa Barbara, as we speak to you. And the people in Southern California say to people in the Midwest, you're crazy, you live there where there are tornadoes. And the people in the Midwest say to people in Southern California, you're crazy, you live where there are earthquakes. Who's crazier in your view?
I'd definitely say the earthquake people because they're not predictable at all.
Really?
I mean, I'd freak out if I experienced an earthquake, to be honest.
So, it would be like...
How many of us here in Southern California have been struck by mini donkeys during an earthquake? You know... If you're lucky, your cat runs around the living room. That's about the extent of it.
Well, Reed Timmer, we are delighted to have you here. We've asked you to play a game we're calling...
We're not going to say anything bad about her, are we?
Right down the road from here, in the hills overlooking the ocean, is a magical compound filled with trees and fountains and unicorns who are living their best life now. It's Oprah Winfrey's Western home. Seeing as we did not get an invitation to visit this time, we thought we'd spend some time with her metaphorically by asking you 3 questions about the life and times of Oprah Winfrey. Answer 2 questions right, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Answer none right, and she'll have you killed. Carl, who is Reed Timmer playing for?
Reed is playing for Mary Brown of Santa Barbara, California.
All right. Time, Reed, to chase the truth. Here's your first question. As she would tell you, as she often tells us, Oprah is not perfect, merely nearly so. Among her minor quirks, she says, are which of these? A, she simply cannot ever remember how to spell the word embarrassed. B, she has a fear of chewing gum. Or C, she cannot abide the taste of plastic cutlery.
I swear I've seen her chewing gum before, so...
You have?
I think I'm going to go... I think
did she fly by during a tornado?
I'd say maybe 3.
You're going for C, that she can't abide the taste of plastic cutlery? Is that you're going for? You're going for C?
Yeah, I'll definitely go with C.
I'm afraid it was B. She has a fear of chewing gum.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know who you saw chewing gum. It wasn't Oprah Winfrey. She explained it by way of childhood trauma. She says her grandmother used to store used but still perfectly good gum on the counter for later use, and it freaked her out. Does not like this stuff. You still have 2 more chances here. Now, Oprah grew up poor, and she likes to stay in touch with the simple folk and their simple pleasures, but she does like to indulge herself on occasion, such as, for example, when she, A, commissioned Ralph Lauren to design a custom cashmere sweater for her dog. B, when she travels with an entourage, including her personal decorator, to redo her hotel rooms to her taste.
Or C, whenever she goes for a jog, she is followed by an aide with a foldable chair in case she gets tired.
Well, I'm thinking you might be trying to throw me a curveball with the two B's in a row, so I think it could be B.
Really, that's where you're going with it?
He's using science.
Two B's in a row. I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if I would give you two B's in a row. It's too predictable. It's too much of a pattern.
Okay, we'll change it to A then.
You know for A that she commissioned Ralph Lauren to design a custom cashmere sweater for her dog? You are correct. That's what she did. To be fair, the doggie came from a shelter. Now it lives like a king. All right, last question. This is for all the marbles. So many people have devoted themselves to the Oprah lifestyle, paying sincere tribute to her, including which of these? A, a woman in Missouri named her daughter Oprah, Oprah, Oprah Levine. B, a retirement home in Florida decided to spend a month only eating, doing, and thinking about things Oprah recommended. Or C, many guilds or player groups in World of Warcraft. That's the massive online fantasy warfare game. They call themselves Oprah Wind Fury.
I think I'm going to go with... it's definitely not A. I mean, it very easily could be, I guess, but I think I'd go with B on this one.
Seriously, like a retirement home in Florida, they just had an Oprah month where they only did things that Oprah said they should do.
Seems the most realistic.
You really don't like the World of Warcraft one?
How can a guy that chases storms be undecided? Don't you have to make quick decisions? Don't you have to, like, go for it? Like, okay, push the hydraulic thing. Don't you have to do it fast?
If you saw us in action, you'd see how many circles we actually drive in. We're all over the place. All right, we'll go with the Warcraft one.
You go with the World of Warcraft one? You're right. Oprah Wind Fury, name of a number of guilds in World of Warcraft. Carl, how did Reed Timmer do?
Well, he came through at the end, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Mary Brown. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. Reed Timmer laughs in the face of danger on Storm Chasers on the Discovery Channel. Reed Timmer, thank you so much for being with us, and good luck.
All right, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Finally, we talked to a real brainiac, a graduate student in public policy at Harvard. That she happened to be a movie star, totally incidental.
I was hardly aware of it. Ashley Judd joined us just off campus in Boston in October of 2009.
I am so nervous to be here. I am so nervous. I was
really
thinking about, I was comparing how nervous I am now to how nervous I wasn't when I addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Really?
Yes. And I think then, because I was speaking truth to power in a way that felt very, spiritual, and I was determined, but oh my God, that's Carl Castle.
So... Let's be honest. Isn't it a cliche, actresses at the height of their career walking away to study public policy at the Kennedy School? I mean, come on.
I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that.
Well, you can tell me. Well, why did you do it? I'm genuinely curious.
I did it because I really want to do my part to help make the world a better place. But, and I really admire what they're doing at the Kennedy School, where we have a mandate to address and solve. We're quite optimistic. The most intractable problems in the world.
But isn't the tradition in Hollywood for stars such as yourself to be involved in causes but without any expertise or actual interest? I mean, you're really bucking the trend here, is what I'm saying. Have you found it difficult to adjust from life as a successful working actor to a student?
No, because acting is what I do. It's not who I am. Mm-hmm. And the poverty and the equity in public health work, I've been doing it for a pretty long time, just more quietly.
Right.
So the transition was fairly easy for me, except for the 20-page paper and style guide and citations.
Right. Yeah. Was it hard to adjust to that? I mean, all of a sudden you're doing papers again.
Oh,
it must
my
have been a while.
God. Well, once I got past the great existential dilemma of three-ring, spiral.
Oof.
Spiral. Three ring.
And what's dorm life like for you?
I am eating like a student. Oh my gosh, the pizza.
Really?
It's so funny. There's something about being a student demands that diet. It's not the other way. It's not their age.
It's just something about the intellectual activity burns those calories, and you need to. Do you sit up late at night and watch your own movies on cable? I mean.
Well, actually, one of my professors, the great Jacqueline Bava, is a great scholar on the issue of the benefits of citizenship and why children themselves are not able to transmit those protections to their parents if they're citizens and their parents are not. Very complex stuff, and I'm like, did you watch Crossing Over? Did you watch my movie?
This is a serious question. Was it a disadvantage in Hollywood being smart? Because that is just not what people expect and maybe want from people in your position.
I think that there are lots and lots of smart people in Hollywood. I really do. I mean, Salma's incredibly bright, for example.
I'm sorry, who?
Salma Hayek.
You might have heard of her. Yes, I'm sorry.
She's kind of gorgeous.
I tend to call her Miss Hayek when I'm discussing this. I miss that. I just...
How you didn't get that job on Entertainment Tonight, I'll never know.
Isn't it crazy? I'll go with that. I mean, I've known some people in Hollywood, and I think they would be intimidated by someone like you if they knew that you were smarter than they were.
I was a lot of fun early on. I stayed at home and I read The Russians and listened to Beethoven. I'm not real popular out there. But that's what I did, and it served me well. And I enjoyed the life I had doing that and not getting STDs.
Well, Ashley Judd, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
That prize was rightfully mine! Mine!
This week, as we said, the Swedish Academy began to award the Nobel Prizes, starting the annual ritual of backbiting, second-guessing, and bitter envy. We're going to ask you three questions about the Nobel Prizes through history. We took them from metalfloss.com. Get two right, you'll win something from one of our listeners. Even Albert Einstein never won. Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is student Ashley Judd playing for?
The student is playing for Doug Hanna from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Ready? Okay. Robert Lucas won the 1995 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics. He may be the unluckiest Nobel winner ever. Why? A, he died from a sudden allergic reaction to the fish at the awards banquet. B, in his divorce settlement years earlier, he had promised to give half of his Nobel Prize money to his ex if he won it by 1995. Or C, journalists looking into his background after he won the prize find out he had shoplifted $3,000 worth of underwear.
I'm actually going to go with B.
You're going to go with
B. Because in my mind, it was my first instinct.
And you're right. That's what happened. He got divorced in 1987, and part of the agreement was that if he ever won the Nobel Prize... he would split the money, but only if he won by 1995. So
he won
in 1995. It cost him $500,000.
You know what I love about that?
What?
He's the kind of person that in drafting a divorce agreement would say, you know, if I win the Nobel Prize, you get to have half of it. Yeah. What kind of person says that?
Hey, I said the same thing when I was divorced.
What kind of person says that?
Or maybe you've got him wrong, though. Maybe he's like, tell you what, I won't give you the house or the car, but I'll give you half my Nobel Prize money. And then he's like, ha-ha, she went for it. All right. Next question. Johannes Fibiger. He won the award in medicine in 1926. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He may not have been the best choice, ultimately, for a Nobel Prize. Why not? A, his great scientific theory for which he won turned out to be entirely wrong. B, he was a pseudonym made up by some other scientists as a joke. Or C, he had Tourette's syndrome, not called that then, and his acceptance speech, sadly unrecorded, caused some to flee the room.
What year was it?
This was 1926.
I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B, he was a pseudonym made up by some other scientists?
The reason I'm going with that is
please.
At that time, they wouldn't necessarily have been able to communicate with one another all that well, and so folks might not have known that it was a pseudonym.
That's extremely plausible.
May not be correct.
But it's plausible, and as we learned at Harvard, that's what counts. It was, in fact, A. He won for his groundbreaking theory that parasites cause cancer, which, as it turns out, they don't.
Lots of other things,
yeah,
but not cancer.
You think he was disappointed. Imagine how the parasites felt. They were like, dude. All right, this is exciting, though. You remember from Hollywood, you always want to come down to an exciting third act. We have done that, because if you get this last one correct, you will win. Anyone can nominate anyone for the Nobel Prizes, especially the Nobel Peace Prize, and partisans often go to great lengths to make their case, such as when which of these happened just recently. A, an Italian singer wrote and recorded the song Silvio Forever to get Silvio Berlusconi the Peace Prize. He's not so much spreading peace but love, but be that as it may. B, when some fans of Martha Stewart redesigned the Nobel Prize trophy using macaroni and rubber cement just the way she would. Or C, when proponents of Joseph Biden prepared a book of haiku composed entirely of his own utterances.
Oh, my God. Who comes up with this stuff?
It just gets slipped under our door before showtime.
I was wondering. I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A, the Italian singer who wrote and recorded the song Sylvia Forever? The audience agrees, and they're all right. It's true.
Yay!
It's A. Here, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, Loriana Lana singing Silvio Forever.
Oh my gosh.
Silvio Forever. Silvio realtà. Silvio per sempre.
Sounds like the Irish Rovers. Silvio.
Everybody! Carl, how did Ashley Judd do on this exam?
Ashley had two correct answers, Peter, so she wins for Doug Hanna. Congratulations.
Well done. Ashley Judd, the talented, successful actor in movies, who's also a student at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Ashley Judd, thank you so much
for
being here. That's it for our admittedly unhelpful advice show this week. Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org, and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Liedemann composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Emily Ecton, and Eva Walchover. Our technical directors are Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle. Thanks to all of our panelists, all our guests you heard, and thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. This is NPR.